Hello and welcome to that 90s Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Jameson Stone. Today's special guest is one half of one of the most dominant, if not the most dominant, and the longest reigning tag team champions in NXT history, Connor from The Ascension, or as we call him these days, Big Con. How are you doing, Con?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. We just had a quick chat about lockdown and things like that. We could probably talk all day about it. But yeah, it's improving for us. So it's all good for us.
It is. Yeah, it's the shits, right, man?
It's just light in the tunnel, like we said earlier. Just can't wait for the world to be back to normal and just actually be able to like shake someone's hand. So it's just so crazy. But how's your day been today over them?
It's been good. You know, we've got some friends in town, some friends and family. And as far as lockdown goes, we've been pretty fortunate and lucky. So, you know, we've been blessed on this end. It's been kind of nice, you know. So I've been fortunate.
Awesome. So before we go into your career, we want to talk about your school, Tampa Bay, and like the good things you're doing there. And you just mentioned to me, it's you and Jay Lethal and the other lad, and doing some good stuff. So how does it feel like training the next generation of wrestlers?
It doesn't make you feel young, I'll tell you that. it's really cool. It's just, it's like branching off into, you know, into something bigger and better than just becoming a professional wrestler. Now you get to give the knowledge back. And, you know, it was one of those things where my wife was trying to find a school to train at the time. And we just happened to have one right around the corner. And so we went there and I walked into Tampa Bay Pro Wrestling and I met David Mercury. And of course, Jay Lethal was there. And it's just something that drew me there with the energy and the kids. And it's just very family oriented. And the people there are just amazing. And they're so hungry, and that makes it, you know, that much better. So I was very fortunate enough to where they brought me in. And it's just been great ever since.
Cool. And must be great, because I was going through your profile, and one of the people I didn't realize you trained underneath him before I'd done some deep research, and the UK's own Norman Smiley. So what was it like training under him?
Yeah. Screaming Norman. Yeah, he Norman. One of the greatest guys in this business. I think you could probably ask any and most wrestlers. They'll tell you, you know, whether they've been around forever or, you know, if they're new. Norman's just there. They don't make him like him. He's just a really, really great guy. So I was very lucky to be able to pick his brain and to actually travel with him a little bit and take the big wiggle, which was always the coolest part of it.
Awesome. And before you got into the training, your childhood, was you a fan of wrestling growing up, or was it something you discovered a little bit later on in life?
Yeah, you know, I think anybody that decides to get into this circus of a lifestyle, I think there's got to be some sort of, you know, attraction there that started when you were younger. You know, for me, it was, I used to sit there and watch it with my grandfather. You know, he was a big Baron von Raschke kind of guy. That's throw some waybacks, right?
Yeah.
Big Baron von Raschke, UConn. So I kind of started getting into that genre, I guess, of a lifestyle when I was young. And then as time went on, we started getting the pay-per-views, and then I started noticing it become very family friendly because my uncles would come over, my aunts, and then my cousins. And then it turned into a big powwow, and who was going to win, who wasn't going to win. And then next thing you know, you're fucking swinging on each other and you're fighting. And, WrestleMania 6 was probably the biggest knockdown dragout we had when it was Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan, because I was the only asshole at that time that was going for the Ultimate Warrior because he was the coolest thing ever. Yeah. Like, he just was ahead of his time. You know, and I turned on Hogan, and I was a big Hogan kid. But when I saw the Warrior, I was like, oh, man, this dude looks cool, man. Yeah. You know, so, yeah. And then, you know, and here's what's really cool is, like, as time went on, let me pull this back a little bit. So the first time I really, really started watching wrestling, I started watching Leap and Lanny Poffo who really drew me into the business because he was just so charismatic and so creative. And, you know, he'd always throw those Frisbees out. And I remember being a kid thinking to myself, I always wanted one of those. And then George the Animal Steel was like my hero, you know, like I thought he was the greatest thing. So not too long ago, I got to meet Lanny for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And it was amazing. And I just thanked him and I told him the stories. And then next thing you know, I'm taking photos with Randy Savage's Hall of Fame ring. And, you know, I get to hug him and just thank him for everything that he's done and him paving the way. And then, you know, it's just, it's really, it's a very humbling experience. And it's cool to not only be a fan, but partake in it and then get to meet your heroes too.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I noticed you worked on the Indies and you was only on there for like 3 or 4 years before you went straight to WWE, I suppose. And but before then, I think you had a stint in TNA. So what was it like working like the very early days of TNA?
It was great. You know, you get to, there wasn't, so, you know, you go back to early 2000s, there wasn't really a lot going on. There was TNA and then there was WWE. And you really didn't have many selections unless you went to Puerto Rico at the time or Japan, but you didn't have a lot of selections. So I felt really, I guess, you know, just lucky to actually be looked at when I went there and to be able to be in some of those little angles, you know, with, I got to be in the ring with Jeff Jarrett. I got to be in the ring with Three Live Crew at the time. I got to be in the ring with Monty Brown, you know, and I'm just, you know, a 20-year-old kid who just started tying his bootlaces up and, you know, didn't know a lockup from an armbar at the time. So, you know, I was really fortunate and lucky, and it was great to be able to not only get to work with those guys, but you get to learn from them and you get to, you know, ultimately be a part of something pretty big and special, you know, which I was very, very fortunate in Florida, especially because, you know, they were right there, you know, in my backyard. So it just happened to work out and I happened to get an opportunity. And it's pretty cool when you look back at it, you think, you know, I was doing a damn river dance, you know, and like, you know, really funny story, really quick. Terry Taylor, the river dance started getting over, which is absolutely atrocious. You know, it was horrible. It was horrible. But it started getting over with the fans, right? And I'll never forget, Terry Taylor walked up to me, the Red Rooster, who I loved as a kid too.
Yeah.
And Terry Taylor walked up to me and he goes, "Hey, aren't you that kid who does the river dance?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "God, I hate you. I wish you were dead." And then he walked off. And I go, "Son of a bitch." It's like, oh my God, the Red Rooster wishes I was dead.
Yeah, by the way. Cool. And you made your way over to WWE and worked in Deep South. And you also made some sporadic appearances in ECW as well. So what was it like working Deep South and making these odd appearances in ECW?
Well, so it, you know, I got to do like some live events and things like that with ECW. Now, there was some speculation out there, if I'm not mistaken, that I was under a helmet, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Well,
I thought it was Basham's.
Yeah, correct. It was. But a lot of people thought that I was one of the people underneath it with my tag partner back in the day, Derek Nykerk.
Right.
And that was never the case. I was never under that. So right. I was like, yeah, I mean, I'll take it, brother. Like, sure. Yeah, that was me. Yeah. But no, that was never me. I was never there. But what I will say with Deep South, and even when I was doing live events with ECW and stuff, I'll go back to the coaches that we had. It was, you couldn't have learned from anyone better than the coaches that we had when we were there. It really was like, you know, it was such a cool thing to know that the assassin, Jody Hamilton, you know, gets to teach you. And for the people that don't know much about, you know, the assassin, you know, he was the one at the power plant to train Triple H.
That's right. Yeah.
So, yeah. And so to be able to learn from him and to speak with him and to explain things when they were wrong, it was amazing. And then Bill DeMott, who to this day I love. Was he a tough trainer? Yeah, he was tough. But you know what? It was tough love. And you grew thick skin in the business. So, and then you know, as time went on, we had Brad Armstrong. We had Dr. Death who came in. We had Robert Gibson who came in. And so Dave Taylor, like it was a plethora of coaches. And if you didn't learn anything, you were pretty fucking stupid. Because, I mean, those guys, I mean, they were awesome. And they wanted to feed the kids. You know, so growing up and being in Deep South, it blew my mind. It did. It was amazing.
It's funny you mentioned Bill DeMott, because a few weeks back I interviewed Joe Redman. He was Oliver Gray in the NXT team with Pac. And same sort of what you said about, oh, great guy, you know, really great guy. And he's hopefully, once the pandemic over, he's going to start touring back over to All Japan soon. So great guy. Good. And he said the same thing about Bill DeMott. He said, was he hard on you? Was he tough? Yes, but you learned. And he said, unfortunately, some people can't take a telling off. And I'm glad that you're at the same mindset, basically, that, you know, you need to be tough enough in this business, especially if you're not cut out for training, there's no way you'd be able to go on the roads.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because a lot of the guys on the indies, they think that they're TV ready and things like that. And then you might be TV ready physically, but it's a whole different mental game too, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool to know that, you know, there would be times where Vic and I would literally get into Gorilla and they would say, hey, we need you guys to cut 3 minutes off the match. Can you do it? And we would look, you know, at whoever the agent was. We wouldn't even panic. We'd be like, yeah, piece of cake.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing to worry about, you know? And if, you know, it was, I don't know, just like you had such thick skin and you weren't worried about nothing. Cause you truly knew that you were good at what the hell you did.
Yeah. Cool. And, you left WWE for a couple of years, but then eventually you returned in 2010 and, in FCW and, NXT season 4. So, it was very different back then than what it is now. And your pros, I suppose, was Alberto Del Rio, which he's had a lot of ups and downs lately. And Ricardo Rodriguez, if you've been following him on social media, his videos from Egypt, he's doing quite well over there. So shout out to him. He has agreed to come on eventually. So he's just so busy. But great guy. So I can't wait to speak to him one day. But what was it like having Del Rio as your pro? And then it didn't last long because he swaps you and you end up with DiBiase and Maurice. So what was it like working the early NXT shows and like working with pros and things like that?
It was difficult.
Yeah.
It was difficult because there's part of you that, you know, you're excited that you're going up to the main roster, but at the same time, that wasn't quite what you worked for, I guess.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, going into season 4, you've already saw season 1 through 3.
That's
so it. You kind of had expectations of what the hell was going to happen. And you just never knew what to expect when you would get to TV. So it was nerve wracking. There'd be times where you think that they would have stuff laid out. You would think that's going to be the challenge. And that wasn't the case. It'd be something else. So you never knew what was really going to happen. There were times where I would be on the other side of the arena cutting a promo as the NXT intro happening, as we're about to go, you know, on TV, and I would have to run all the way around that damn arena.
Wow.
And by the time I'd get into Gorilla, I was blown high. Like I was blown. I was just like,
yeah.
And you got to walk out on stage and stand there while the cameras get the shots of you. And I'm trying to like hold my breath and act like I'm not tired. And I'm just, you know, I was just extremely just blown up, man. But you know, you look back at it and you can appreciate it because it was definitely something of its time.
Yeah.
I will say that I definitely think that I much more appreciate the NXT we see now.
Yeah.
than preview of what it used to be. And I'm grateful that those boys don't have to go through that.
Yeah.
So I've got mixed emotions about that. Del Rio was great, you know. Dos is awesome. Ricardo, he's like family. I love him to death. My wife loves him. He's like family to us under our household. And I did see that he's out in Egypt, which I told him I'm extremely jealous because I've always wanted to see the pyramids in person.
Ah, me, same here. It looks great over there. And I think
you and I are one of these days.
I think, last time I saw, I think Carlito and Chris Masters are heading over there to join them as well. So you got even more reason to be jealous. So I can imagine they're just having such a good time over there.
Yeah.
So speaking of Ricardo, the original days of the Ascension. So before he became vampires, he was more of a kind of entourage. Well, that was what Ricardo pitched, I suppose, like the TV show Entourage. And it was yourself, Ricardo, Kenneth Cameron, obviously we know him as Tom Latimer, or Bram for TNA fans, Shao Guerrero, and Epico. Which one, like, obviously we'll speak about the Entourage field to begin with. So what was it like when, like, management said to you, right, we'll pair the five of yous together? And then I know Dusty came along and decided to change into Vampire. So what was, like, the process through that?
Yeah, I'm actually having flashbacks as you're talking about it. I think it was NXT season 5, I got voted off. And it would have been a Tuesday, which means Wednesday I would have had practice. And I remember walking in, and they pulled me aside, and they said that we have an idea for you. And I said, oh, okay, well, what's the idea? And they told me about this entire group. And I looked around, and I said, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Like, it looks like five randoms just thrown together.
That's
legit. Yeah. I mean, it didn't even make sense to me. What the hell do we have in common? Like, I'm looking around and I'm like, I don't even fit in this project. Like, how does this even work? So, you know, Bill was just like, just, you know, give it a chance. You know, Dusty's got some ideas. Ricardo's got some ideas. And I said, okay, all right. And then, you know, Ricardo, you know, would explain, you know, he was, you know, all about explaining, you know, things. And he's like, this is what I've got. This is my idea. There's five of us, five chakras. We're going to call ourselves the Ascension. And in his vision, it was more of a light, positive type thing, which is cool, you know?
Yeah.
And so I still didn't see it, though. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think you can probably find that promo on YouTube. And when you look at us, it just didn't look right.
You did look a bit awkward, yeah. I did see it.
Oh, man, it was the weirdest fucking thing ever. And so one day, Ricardo, he was out at TV. He had to go to TV, and he was on the West Coast. And I texted Ricardo, and I said, hey, man, I go, what would you like us to do? We are, you know, we got promos today, and we don't have any way that we want to do this. So do you have any idea for us to cut these promos? And he said, talk about the Ascension and talk about what it means to you. And I said, okay, cool. So I spread the text out and I said, okay, I think we should all dress at least like business. So black, whatever.
Yeah.
So we all get there and I was like, okay, there's five of us. There's four turnbuckles and we can have Shaw stand in the middle. It makes sense. You know, she's like the eye candy, right?
Yeah.
She'd be like the leader or whatever. And so we did that. We cut the promo and it looked great. We didn't see it at first. We cut the promo and then Dream comes walking out and he's like, come here, I want you all to see something. So we all got down. I'm thinking, oh man, we really fucked this one up, guys. So we go in his office and we sit there. They play it back and he goes, I want you all to look right here and tell me what you see. And I was like, all right. So they're playing it. We're looking. And I said, five assholes. And Dream says, no, baby, I see vampire. And I go, and I guess like the time, I think True Blood was the end thing. I don't watch a lot of TV. You know what I mean?
No.
So then Shaw started kind of explaining things to us. And she was like, yeah, True Blood. It's like really popular. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, man. Yeah, whatever. Like sounds cool, but it looked good. It looked good. Yeah. And so so Dream looked at me and he goes, Ricardo don't belong in here. We're kicking him the fuck out. And I go, oh no. I literally go, no, no, no. I said, Dream, he helped us with this promo. And he goes, he doesn't look right for the part. And I'm like, oh no, no. And so I was like, Dream, I can't tell him that. This is his thing. Like, this was what he started. And all I did was what he asked us to do. And somehow this all backfired on me.
Yeah.
And so I guess Dream talked to him or whatever. And it worked out. It was fine. To this day, I still love Ricardo. And I always give him credit because it really was his idea. Yeah. He was the one. He was the brainchild that came up with the name, you know?
Yeah.
When I looked at it, I was like, I just see, you know, I don't see shit. I just see five guys they don't have nothing for. That's what I saw. And it turned out to be something pretty damn spectacular.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, Con. So I didn't see, like, I remember seeing, like, the game show version of NXT, but I didn't see, like, when they started treating NXT more serious. I didn't really see them early days. So when I was going back and, like, I'm a big fan of Tom Latimer. I've always have been a fellow UK guy. I'm biased, okay?
Me too.
And I was going through, like, the old promos, and I think this kind of got the ball rolling for our interview because I saw the clip of the promo using them. I'm like, man, this is fucking awesome. And I posted it online. I tagged you, Tom, Shal, and Epico into it. And because I spoke to Epico a few weeks before and I interviewed him and we spoke about the early days of the Ascension. And I was like, man, this is such a good promo. And I'm glad that I posted it because it's led to this. But it was great stuff, but it didn't last long, unfortunately. Was it you who got injured, I think? And then Shal started being trapped more as a singles wrestler. Epico got called up and it was basically just, you know, Tom left till you came back and he's got put as a team. So how did it feel going from a stable to just a tag team?
Well, I mean, honestly, it was the right thing to do, clearly, because when you look at it, it couldn't have evolved as big as it got. You know what I mean? But it was shocking. Like, what did it? So it was one of the shows, one of the live events that we did for NXT or FCW at the time. I can't remember which one. I want to say it was NXT, but no, it was probably FCW actually. It's been a while. So that night we were having a match, and I think one of the guys was Riley Pierce, if I'm not mistaken. Anyways, I needed to take a low rope, and he ended up pulling the rope down. He shoot pulled it down as I was going to hook to go over. And as I went to go, I missed it. And as I missed it, I went over the top, completely missing the rope, and I went backwards, back straight onto the concrete. We didn't have pads. So what ended up happening was that night, I had to drive to the hospital and I had Tom with me. So of course he can vouch for this. But I was urinating blood. And it gets worse. It was just a really bad night for me. So they checked me in and they found out that I had kidney contusions, a broken lower back, and my hand, if you can see my finger, it's literally, I had to have my tendon reconstructed to be around my finger because it tore right off.
Wow.
So it was a long recovery. And during that duration of the recovery, I think I want to say I was out for about 9 months, maybe 10 months. A lot had changed. Epi got called up. Shaw wanted to go do her own thing, which she should have always have done her own thing because she's a Guerrero. She doesn't need nobody.
Yeah.
And then Tom was holding the ball and Tom was running with this thing. And, you know, Tom would always come over, check on me and stuff like that. And then I started watching. I started coming to the shows and watching, but I would sneak in there. I'd go into the room with Dream because he had like an all dark room. So I'd go in there and I'd watch the show. And I watched Tom's entrance because this is when he started having the light effect.
That's right.
He started looking like it was just the coolest thing, man. He has that face. And I saw like this handsome Jack the Ripper, just stoic looking killer, you know? And I remember just watching it. And then of course I was just like, man, like that looks fucking cool. And then I was like, I've got something I think I can add to that. So then I started playing with it over time where I had the light up eyes, the big fur jacket I had made. I had this whole look in my mind. It was basically that look that I created was the look of this, this nightmare I used to have when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
And I basically would every time I had this nightmare when I was a kid, I'd be running down a hallway, but I couldn't go nowhere. Yeah. And this door would slowly open up, and then these you'd see a head come out, and its eyes would open up, and they were blue, and they were like, and I would see this hand slowly grab me by my leg, and it would pull me in, and then I'd wake up. So I kind of created that character in my own head because of that nightmare I would have. So I came back, and then I was just like, wow, this whole thing is complete 180. It's like completely different. It looks different. Yeah. But it was money. It was gold, you know, and then Dream got more his hands on it. And then Dream started rolling with things. And then we started pitching ideas. And then we started wearing business looking outfits. And, it's really cool to talk about because so many people were invested into it. You know, Triple H was invested into it. Dream was invested into it. Bill DeMott was invested into it. Billy Gunn was invested into it. Like it had money written all over it.
Yeah, and the vignettes you've done as well, like you've on top of like cathedrals and buildings and that. And it was so good to, you know, it was just great. Like, you know, if like I try to watch wrestling in the eyes of like, say, a casual fan, and yeah, we all enjoy a wrestling match. My favorite wrestler of all time is Bret Hart. I love a good wrestling match much the next person, but people watch wrestling for the characters. And if you're just a casual fan, you're watching NXT or FCW, for example, and also in this promo cuts out, comes up, and there's these two badass looking dudes on top of a cathedral. And it's going to take your attention, that is. So it's great stuff. And you were having a pretty good run, but unfortunately, you know, Tom made a mistake. He said that himself. He made a mistake, and unfortunately, you know, he paid for it and got released. And, you know, fortunately, he's in a lot better place these days, and he's coming to the show soon. And I can't say enough things about Tom. I love Tom so much. He's one of my guys, but he paid for that mistake. So you've been put back into singles. So what was it like losing Tom? I can only imagine, like, he was just apologizing to you, saying sorry and things like that.
Oh, it was heartbreaking, because it's like, the one thing I'll say is, like, you know, with Tom is like family. Like, he was there wasn't very many people I would invite into my house, you know, and go out. I didn't hang out with a lot of people, you know? And so he literally was like my brother. And so to lose him, it was hard. It was really hard. I remember cutting a promo. I had to do my first promo by myself without him. And I remember being so mad. I threw a chair across the, and it was right there in front of everybody. I was cutting a promo. I picked a chair up and I threw it across the damn the room, and all the kids were like, "Oh my God!" You know, like, I was so angry and I was so sad. I had all these emotions going through me. But it's, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's much like you said. I think it worked out a lot better for him.
Yeah,
because he's in a great place right now. He's done a lot of great things, and he's still continuing to do great things. I mean, the guy. So yeah, I think, you know, he looks great now.
Like, he's in best shape.
Yeah, right. So
yeah,
I think he's doing okay for himself. I'm happy for him, you know. I think he's about to he's getting hitched up now. He's getting married.
Camille. Yeah. So it's so great. And like I love NWA Power, and like can't wait for that to come back as well. So it'll be great once that's back on. But after this, they decided to put you in a little bit of a singles run, and they actually announced you as the Ascension Conor O'Brien. And one of the feuds you got into was with the current NXT champion at the time, Big E. And so what was it like starting to work singles and like being put at the top of the card working with Big E?
It was interesting because I had worked tag for so long that, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. So to be able to be put in that position was pretty cool. And there's nothing you can't love about Big E. He's just, you know, he's just an all around genuinely good dude, you know?
Yeah.
I think if I'm not mistaken, I put on some weight specifically for that match because he's so big, you know, so strong. And so I literally was like, okay, so they pulled me aside and said, we're going to build to this feud. And I'm sitting there looking around. I'm like 250, 260 at that time. Still big. But I'm like, I got to get at least 280 because he's every bit of 300 pounds. You know what I mean? So, so we were just two big hosses just doing our thing. And it was a pleasure. And it's really cool to see where he's, what he's elevated himself to now, even to this day.
Yeah.
So you look back at it and you think to yourself, like, that was a really cool time.
Cool.
You know, I love singles, you know, I love tag, I love singles, but,
yeah,
it was awesome.
Cool. And, I'm guessing you didn't have any interaction with him, but around about this time, CM Punk walked out. Did you hear much about it, like in NXT, like hearing that, wow, CM Punk has actually just walked out on Vince and like things like that? Did that make its way towards NXT? And like, what was your feelings when that happened?
No, I didn't get too much into all that. I was so busy focused on trying to get to the main roster by that point.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's going to handle his business however he has to handle it. You know, I didn't know much about it. I don't like being too nosy, and I don't like getting into people's business because I don't want people getting in my business, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And after your singles run, Victor came along and reformed, you know, the new generation of the Ascension. So how did that come about? You and Victor getting paired up? But perfectly complemented like the style used with wrestling. So whose idea was it to pair you two up?
So that was Hunter. Hunter came up with the concept because he felt that, you know, that Eric looked very much the part. You know, he looked like a vampire.
True.
And so and at the time too, I was trying to pull to get Neville in there also as well. Because I thought he looked like a gargoyle to me. And I was like, oh my God, like he looks so great, you know, and he's amazing. Yeah. You know, and you know, Vic's work speaks for itself. He was the last of the dungeon.
That's right.
So it was different. So Hunter came up with the idea of giving us a little more edge. So we ended up getting rid of all the gothic stuff. And then we just basically threw some chains on and then the hard heavy metal music and was more our style with the heavy metal and everything. And then Vic, you know, he's a damn good worker too. So
yeah.
So it took some time, but once we started meshing together, like we started wearing the same clothes. We just show up wearing the same shirts. And then, you know, it was almost like it was meant to be. It's just crazy, you know. So it worked out. You know, I thought it was pretty cool.
And when I mentioned to people that, like, I was interviewing you today, everyone said, man, they had such an awesome theme song and entrance.
I think our theme song was more popular than our work.
No. But you soon ran roughshod on the tag division, and you mentioned him earlier, Adrian Neville, Pac, as everyone calls him these days. You've defeated him and Corey Graves for the tag team titles and went out on this big, massive run. But what was it like when, I suppose, this was the time when Triple H took over and he said to you, right, guys, giving you the belts?
Yeah, it was sink or swim, basically, you know, and I think we were up for the challenge. And there wasn't too much going on at that time, too. We were so busy doing live events at that time, doing NXT, you know, loops out down here in Florida. You know, we were sitting there, we were trying to get, you know, the Vaudevillains set, you know, so we were working other tag teams, Enzo and Cass at the time.
Yeah.
So we were working with these teams, trying to gel them to get them set and ready as well. So we were trying to build the tag division because there wasn't very many teams at that time. But when we were told that, we were up for the challenge. And I mean, Graves is awesome. You know, Neville's amazing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So to be able to have that kind of trust with the company to take those straps and still hold the record, which is crazy to me.
64 days.
You know, that's truly an honor because, you know, you go back to everything I was telling you about earlier with Jody Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, and now you've got, you know, one of his favorite students, you know, trusting you, you know. So it's just kind of like a Jody Hamilton type trade off. I don't know. It was, man. And so we just did the best we could with it for almost a year, you know.
Yeah, one day off, basically, 364, but one of the matches, you know, one day. One of the matches, you know, and it was just such a highlight because it was for the first ever NXT special, I suppose, but also the first event for the WWE Network, used to against Too Cool, Scotty Too Hotty and Grandmaster Sexy, unfortunately, sadly passed away since. But what was it, I can imagine you watched WWE during the Attitude Era. So what was it like working, you know, these two guys and like, wow, I'm actually wrestling the guys I'm seeing on TV?
Yeah, I think, you know, what made it so much better was not only were they were just awesome, right? You watch them, you love what they do. And it was, you know, me and Vic were wondering who was going to take the worm. And, you know, it was like a big altercation. I'm like, no, brother, I want to take the worm. He's like, no, I'm taking the worm. I'm like, fuck it. And fine, you take the fucking worm. You know, but what was so cool about that day, I remember that day like it was nothing, because my little brother came to that show. My little brother used to do the worm when he was a kid.
Wow.
And that was his favorite wrestler, was Scotty Too Hotty. And that was his favorite tag team. So I got him to come there. Yeah. I didn't tell him who we were working. He had no idea.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, I got to kind of like live in that moment, you know, to not only be able to work a tag team that, you know, I actually fucking love.
Yeah.
And then my brother gets to see his big brother work the tag team that he loves. So it was like a win-win, you know. And then the fact that we went over was pretty cool, because honestly, like I was just happy being in the ring with those guys, you know.
Yeah.
They're easy to work, professional. They were super nice, you know. Scotty's he's like an angelic angel, you know. He's so nice. He's such a great person.
Cool. And one of the names I want to mention before we move along, and I suppose he was out of creative during this time for NXT, was Dusty. I can imagine you had a few Dusty stories, but what was your favorite Dusty story working with him?
So, all right. So, there's a few good ones. I'm just trying to think of which one to talk about. You know what? I'll go with the Ascension.
Yeah.
But right before we got called up, Dream was pitching a fit. He was upset. Right. He had no idea why. And he was walking down the hallway yelling, saying, they're making my dent in the goddamn Egyptians. And we didn't know what talking about. We had no idea. And so, you know, we had word by that point that we were getting ready and prepped to go to the main roster. So we were excited. And Dream was so pissed off. And Dream was like, they're fucking my tag team up. And I'm saying, I just remember not understanding, because I'm like, well, damn, we've been in NXT for so damn long. You'd think he'd be happy to get rid of us at this point. So the day comes where we get the big call. So we're sitting in the big office. We're doing like a Zoom meeting. They're calling from Stamford, Connecticut. We're going live. It was Triple H. It was Jane Geddes at the time, and a few other people. And it was me sitting right here. Dream was literally sitting right next to me. Bill, Ryan Katz, and Vic. And I remember Hunter saying, congratulations, you guys are coming to the main roster. We're proud and excited to have you guys bust your ass. You know, we're glad that you're going to be part of the main roster. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, yes. And I'm kind of crying, tears in my eyes, because this is every fucking thing you work for, right?
Yeah.
Dream, I look over and Dream's just sitting there like no emotion. No emotion at all. And so they literally tell us that creative has an idea for us, and they're literally pulling the pieces of paper up right now. And I was like, okay, so they send them over the documents. They set the paper down right in front of us, but it face down. All of them. We all get them. Except for Dream. Dream doesn't want one. So Hunter says, so this is what Creative has for you. If you flip it over, you're going to see what they have in mind. We flipped it over and I go, Dream goes like this, sitting next to me. He goes, fucking Egyptians. And I go, motherfucker. you could look back at that now and appreciate that, because it was pretty damn funny. You know, yeah. You didn't get it then, but now it's like, oh yeah, fuck, okay, all right, I'm with you, dude. I got you now.
Yeah.
God rest his soul.
And to be fair, he was kind of right when you actually think about it, like changing your gimmick into
Dream knew.
I actually had that as a separate thing, but you basically covered all that. So thanks, but great story, and like rest in peace of the Dream. You know, he will forever be missed. But yeah, he's got called up and he's attacked Miz and Sandow and defeated him in his debut. And I can imagine there's such a big difference between, obviously, FCW and NXT, I suppose, was quite similar, but NXT to main roster's different beast. So what was it like when you and Vic walked through them doors and like must have been like, whoa, this is a different ball game altogether?
Yeah, the transition isn't as hard as I think some people might think, because you work with a lot of those backstage people at NXT. Like, you've got the writers, oh, right, out there. You've got the agents that are there, so you're already building relationships there. It really wasn't that difficult, but for some reason, I think genuinely most people, when they get to the main roster, they'll feel a little bit like they're walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
But, and that's normal. You know, that's, you don't want to piss the wrong people off. You always want to, you know, be professional. But it really wasn't difficult. We love most, especially me, because, you know, I'd been around for my first stint. I knew most of those guys already as it was.
Yeah.
It's just the thing that was different for me at the time was just the travel.
Yeah.
You know, it was different going from town to town. It was different being on the road five, six days a week, 4 days a week, whatever it may be. You literally come home, unpack your bag, throw it in the wash, clean them, fold them, and then you're back out on the road again.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the adjustment thing for me. But you know, it's like anything. Eventually you basically just learn, you know, you adapt.
Yeah, and one of the first big promos you were putting was in the ring with NWO, New Age Outlaws, and the APA, and you had that segment, which eventually led to your match with the Outlaws at the Rumble. But what was it like being in the ring with these legends? Because, like, in one set, it's a big deal because you've been put in with these rings, but a lot of people online said that this was kind of like the point where they realize, yeah, they're not going to push these guys top of the division. So was that how you felt, or did you feel like being in the ring with these legends, we was getting the rub sort of thing?
That's exactly what I thought. So for me, like, I always look at things from a business perspective. I try not to look at it from a fan's perspective, because it's easy to get, I guess, emotional about it. The way I look at it is, you know, I was grateful for that, because we were trusted to do the right thing and to be in the ring with those guys.
Yeah.
And they trusted us not to fuck it up. You know what I mean? And so that says a lot. I know Vince was really happy with it. And what that ended up doing was it created some heat, because we were disrespecting them. There were other promos that, you know, it was pissing people off. And what ended up happening was, at the end of the day, is that, you know, we wrestled the New Age Outlaws and we went over on them. So the story basically was we disrespected them. They handed us our ass, but we went over clean in the pay-per-view in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So there wasn't, I know what you're talking about, because, you know, we all the boys that we it's a social media world now. And so we see it and we know about it, and I get it, but there's also that professional point of it also. And, you know, it just, I don't know, I don't see it as that. I see it was a great opportunity to make people go, who the fuck are these guys, you know? Because at that time, NXT really wasn't taking off by that point. August, was it August maybe, or when they hit their first big pay-per-view or something like that?
Yeah,
we just missed it. you know? So yeah. It, go fucking figure, right? When we, right when we get called up, NXT explodes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think it was Finn Balor when they brought him in. That was like when they started like making it more of a thing, I suppose. But yeah, and eventually you made your debut at WrestleMania on the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. So what's it like working WrestleMania? Like you've grown up watching, you said earlier, watching WrestleMania 6, and then, you know, 25 years later, I suppose it was, you're at WrestleMania 31 in front of thousands and thousands. So was it like, you know, chills and things? I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I mean, that's everything you work for. That's what you strive for. And then to what, like, you always hear stories, you know, when you're there and you hear the veterans talk about it. And then when you get to fucking get there and you get to witness it, it's just like a sea of people.
Yeah.
You just look out and they're just everywhere. And you just see cameras going off and the place is so loud. And I'm just like, wow, like this is what I worked for. This is the biggest stage in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't make it there and a lot of people bust their ass. And so I could go to my grave happy with that.
Yeah.
Would I like to have had more? Absolutely. But I think I did okay, you know, from a kid working at TNA, just helping guys out, you know, to walking out on the grandest stage of it all. It's just, it was amazing. And those are memories that you'll always keep with you, you know.
Yeah.
To this day, the students ask me about it. They're like, what was that like? You know, was it intense? Were you scared? This is fucking amazing. Like,
yeah, I can imagine.
It was fucking amazing.
And WWE's famous for touring the UK like after WrestleMania, so I can imagine you've been on a few of the tours. So what's the UK fans like? I know we can be a little bit hostile and we're pretty damn loud, so how do you feel like when you come over to the UK working it?
I love it. I love the UK.
Yeah,
I do, because they just want to have fun.
Yeah,
you know, they're not, they're serious, but I've noticed they're not that serious. You know, they just didn't want to enjoy themselves. I think basically it all boils down, they just want everyone to have fucking fun.
Yeah.
Get drunk, have fun, get wild, get crazy, you know. And I've had, you know, some great nights there. Like I've gone out and had some drinks and stuff, and you know, it's just it's good people. Like Bournemouth is my favorite place.
Bournemouth.
Visually, it's just my favorite place. Like I just love the scenery. I love looking out that big wide open ocean, you know. It makes me feel like home. Just great memories in the UK. Like the people are amazing. I love the fucking people there, and I connect with them, which is odd because they're over here in America, they're like, they've got like the driest sense of fucking, you know, sense of humor.
Yeah.
I love it. Fucking love it though. Maybe that's why Tom and I got along so great. I don't know.
Oh, probably. Yeah. It definitely ripped off on you. And and obviously, when you're touring the UK, you're in the buses together, I would imagine, on the plane, right? So there must be a fun story, like, traveling back and forth to the UK.
I mean, it was all... The party would start as soon as we'd leave the arena to go to the airport.
Yeah.
Like, it was... It was just always such a good time. Like it never ended. Like it was just 2 weeks of nonstop action, you know.
Yeah.
Performing, being on the buses, going to the next town, having a couple drinks with the boys, going out once in a while, you know. And around good people. That's the best part about it. You know, people that knew how to have fun and let loose.
Cool. And I don't know if you was around him much, but I always ask everyone, like, was you ever around John Cena, and what was he like to be around with?
Yeah, John liked us. Like, he was great. John, I don't know if there was ever a harder working motherfucker in the business than John.
Yeah.
Like every time he was doing a Make-A-Wish, or I mean, you talk about being spread thin.
Yeah.
You know, that guy worked and still does work so hard, you know, and that guy literally carried that company on his back.
Yeah.
And it was not very many people could do what he did.
No.
Like that is a special human being right there. So it was great. You know, you'd ask him questions, you get feedback. He always took the time to talk to you. He always took the time to talk with his fans, to just make them feel special, you know? And he didn't have to.
No.
And I think that's what was so cool about him, was that the guy had everything, money, fame, but you go to the arena and you'd see him playing cards, you know, yeah, with the referees, you know, like he was just that cool. He was just one of the guys, you know? So it was, cool. It was cool. It was cool having him in your corner. I can tell you that.
Cool. And after this sort of time, he's got teamed up with Cody, who's doing great things in AEW, but the Cosmic Wasteland. So how did that come about? It was, for what it was so much fun to watch. So how did it come about?
You would have to ask Cody that one, because I don't quite remember how that came about, to be honest with you. I don't know how that got pitched. I'm not sure if that was Cody's idea or if that was a writer's idea, but it worked out. It was just a lot of fun. It was probably, because I think we went through a dry period there where we weren't doing a lot, which is always frustrating.
Yeah.
And it came about, and we had a little bit of creative freedom, and, you know, me being stupid me, I'd always want the littlest things to hold. I'd hold like a little card, like I'm holding a big sign, yeah, you know. It was just fun, you know. And then Cody and I, you know, Cody was at OBW when I was in Deep South. So there was one night we were in the arena about to go stand out by the crowd. I think Neville was having a match, and Cody looked back at me and he goes, "Hey, Connor," he goes, "remember 2007? I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Look at us now." And he's all painted up the Stardust. And just started dying laughing. And I'm like, "Brother, you ain't lying, man." You know, but it was a lot of fun. It was short-lived, unfortunately. But it was very comic book-esque, too, which was really cool.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think we were going against the Lucha Dragons, and it was Neville. And I remember the big comic book painting that they did of us or whatever, and I was like, "Whoa!" I was like, "Man, that's fucking sick."
Yeah,
you know. So it was fun, short lived, which is a shame, but it was a lot of fun, man.
It was, and end of the day, yeah, it's great when wrestling can be serious, but at the end of the day, wrestling is supposed to be fun and entertaining, and that's what I found with it. And you mentioned like it was, well, before that time and a little bit after this time as well with between Cody. You went through a bit of a dry patch. You was on TV like quite often, if not on SmackDown or Raw, you was on main event. So you were always on TV. But wasn't there ever any discussions like to give you the belt? Because like, why not? Because like I remember when I used to play WWE 2K, and like, you were one of the top guys. Like, I was like, why stick the belt to them? Because you had the entrance. You had the special entrance where you actually had the belt, and it was like a special entrance. I'm thinking, they put enough effort in the game. Why don't they just actually do it in real life and put belts on these guys? So wasn't there any discussions to put the belts on you?
You know, a lot of that stuff, I think, is kept behind doors. I don't know. You don't get to hear anything like that. Generally, that's kind of between a few heads at that point. That's completely up to them. There was ideas, there was things that were pitched, there was things that were talked about. It just didn't come to fruition, you know, and I could sit there and pout about it, but that, you know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, we're men, and it's just, you know, it's just fucking business. It's not nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I look at it. So I don't ever hold a grudge over shit like that. Would we have liked it? You bet your ass we would have.
Yeah.
But it just didn't work out that way, and it fucking was what it was, you know.
We have to talk about, I absolutely loved every time of this, the Fashion Files. I had so much fun watching it, and watching yous and like Breeze and Fandango. I know yous were having fun, and one of my favorite ones was when yous admitted to a crime you didn't commit, and your reason for it, we just wanted to be on PPV. So What was it like working? I think my favorite fashion file was sword. And,
yeah.
you're in the bathroom. They've unlocked the keys, and you're like, right, guys, use go. And then when Fandango came back, he was like, I knew you would save us. And I think he forgot. I got something, and he went back off, and he's like, "You save yourself." So, how much fun was it doing the fashion files and being paired up with Breeze and Fandango?
So for me, like, we've already built a relationship, and with Fandango, like, I've known since Deep South.
Oh, wow.
And he lived with me. He was a roommate. We brought him in, me and Mike Knox. So yeah. We had brought him in, and it's always cool to, like, work with people that you've known forever. Yeah. And it just makes work that much better anyways. We had a lot of creative liberty with the fashion files. And I think that's why it started really catching on and it got a good buzz. We were just having fun. The writers were having fun with it. The first one we ever did was out in the UK, actually.
All right.
That was the first one we did where we were part of it. And there was a lot of yelling because they were at a crime scene and there was a lot of yelling and stuff going on. And they opened a door and it was me and Vic in a locked closet.
Right.
And we're
screaming. Yeah.
And I turned around and I looked at him and I dropped the chain in my hand.
Yeah.
And it just was real weird and kind of creepy. It just kind of could have been gross, like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So we were just, you know, messing around with it. And then it started catching on. And I think we did we did one where I was pouring syrup on a log. And I remember reading this whole thing. And it was Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And the Twin Peaks knockoff. And I remember reading it and I go, oh fuck, man. Like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, and I remember Dango looked at me and he's just like, well, boys, looks like the ship's sinking tonight. But the funny thing about that was that caught national news, which was really weird. And then it just, that's when certain higher ups were like, I think we might have something here. And then more hands started getting involved into it. And then it started not becoming what it was. And then it just kind of like...
Too many chefs, like, in the kitchen.
You know, and that's not fun no more.
No.
You know, but it was great working with them. And we were popping all the time before we would shoot. We were laughing. The writers were laughing. Like, just so stupid, you know?
Yeah.
But it all goes back to kind of what we said earlier. Like, if, you know, we're having fun, everyone's having fun.
Yeah.
And it was getting over. And we would sit there in Gorilla and we would listen to the fans' reaction. And they were going crazy for it. And I was like, wow. But so I'll give you a little hit on that. So what was supposed to happen, because no one knows the true story of what was supposed to happen.
Right.
Birthday, it was going to be the debut, you know, of Bludgeon Brothers and all that. But the rib on all that was what was supposed to be happening is it was supposed to be Vic and I that was setting this all up.
All right.
That was going to be the direction they were going to go before it just kind of got dropped. So we were the ones that were supposedly going to be the bad people. We were going to turn on them. But it ended up being, you know, what it was. It was a lot of fun. And it's what's funny is, like, when I talked to some of the fans about it, like, it left, you know, it left memories with them and they were all good ones. So
yeah,
did something right, you know, maybe not much, but we did something right.
Oh no, it was great things. Like I said, I can remember it quite vividly. Like I said, the Saw parody, I pissed myself laughing when the first time I saw it. So, because I'm a big fan of Saw. So when I'm watching this, I'm pissing myself laughing.
Yeah.
And they eventually moved you back to Raw, I suppose, and you became heels again. And you started doing like a brief program with Chad Gable and Robert Roode, and you scored a big pin with Roode, and I was watching that and thinking, I wonder if they're going to start treating Connor as a single star because you've got the size and the look. So was there ever any talk of like splitting yourself possibly and like going singles?
I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah. Well, there was, I mean, you heard that there was going to be a possible split up, but man, the thing is like in this business, like, you know, you don't always believe what you hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because things can always change on a dime. It literally can. And I think right when all this stuff was happening, if I'm not mistaken, Roman came out by that time and kind of explained his health issues. And so I think everything literally just got, you know, thrown to the wayside.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, I wasn't obviously by that point anyways, like a main focus. So it was just, you know, I just maybe think it got forgotten about, but I don't know. It doesn't really matter. It was fun, and I'm undefeated in WWE. As a wrestler.
That's true. That's true. And I think, I don't know if we was past the days of Wrestler's Court, but during your time there, was there still a Wrestler's Court about? And if there was, I can't imagine there was, but making a Wrestler's Court, the main guy was The Undertaker, and obviously he's just confirmed retirement. So did you have any much interactions with Taker?
As far as person to person, yes. I he's the judge of the jury. He's awesome. You respect him. You love him.
Yeah.
But thank God I never had to go to Wrestler's Court.
No.
Like, you know, I always played by the books. You know what I mean? I always was polite and always professional. You know, I didn't get into too much trouble. So I didn't have to worry about that. But, you know, some of the things, like some of the guys that had to go through that, I couldn't imagine. And I wouldn't want to imagine. You know, horror stories, you don't know if they're true, but you're like, man, I know that's where I don't want to fucking go.
Cool. And his final match was against Heavy Machinery on the, I think it was a main event, and eventually you just got your release. So what was it like when you just got the news, like you just got released? Like you were there for 9 years, so, and obviously you was there beforehand as well for another couple of years. So what was it like when the news finally came, right, we're releasing you? I can only imagine it's like, wow, Jimmy Dream. And obviously you've had great memories and you've done a lot of work in there, but what was it like when you finally heard that, like, we're released, not just you and Vic, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad, because first off, you always hear about these horror phone calls. I didn't get that phone call. Mine was more of a, it was actually really nice, to be honest with you. And you do, you're always going to feel bad about it, because I was with that company for so long.
Yeah.
And it is, WWE is like, you know, they're family to me. You know, that's the way I've always felt about WWE. It's like you said, 3 to 4 years, and all of a sudden you go to WWE, you kind of, you know, that's really all you learn and that's all you know.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, to get the call, you never want to get the call. But I think, too, honestly, by that point, there wasn't a lot going on for us anyways.
No.
You know, which sucks, you know.
Yeah.
But it just kind of was what it was. And it's just like, if you're not going to be used, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to go through sitting in catering, pitching ideas, hoping to not be used, because that to me is worse than being let go, because you're literally sitting there wanting to be a part of something that right now there are just no plans for you. So for me, it kind of was a sense of relief, and it just needed to happen. And this business, they say you never say never. So would we ever go back? I don't know. You know, would I put a suit on and, you know, and hold a pen? I don't know. Maybe, you know, so it's just, it's bittersweet, but it was, I don't regret it. Like, I had so many good things, and my careers last longer than most people, you know, so I've got nothing but great memories. And honestly, it being a coach now, it's kind of cool, because I can, you know, get kids primed and ready for what that experience could be like for them, you know?
Yeah. And obviously, we've gone, we're nearly through the pandemic, but once everything returns normal, landscape of wrestling's changing. Obviously, you got WWE, AEW, Impact, NWA, MLW, OVW, Ring of Honor. So There's a lot of choices, so I won't be surprised if I see you and Vic on our screens there pretty soon. So, but yeah, and the last guy we're going to speak about, we saved the best to last, the main man himself, Vince McMahon. So what's your best Vince McMahon story, and what was your relationship like with him?
It was pretty cool, man. It wasn't, we weren't like, you know, I didn't have like the tightest relationship with him.
Yeah.
But when we came up with the whole rat character way back in the day, he had this this idea of calling me Ryan Allen Templeton, the rat, which I thought was, you know, it was kind of cool, you know. And there was, you know, talks of, this is right when they were thinking about debuting Kofi at the time too. And so they were talking about, you know, manholes, me crawling out of the sewer and stuff like that, which I thought was so cool, right? And so I had that. Johnny Ace had set up a meeting with me and Vince McMahon. And I remember walking in there, and Vince was like, knocking on the door, and I hear, "Come in." And I walked in, and I'm like, "Holy shit, this is like everything that like you hear, and this is it. This you're gonna come if he likes you, if he doesn't like you." And he sat down, and Johnny was sitting right there with me, and Johnny's like, "You know, we need to find a gimmick for him." Vince is looking at me, and he's just like, "Yeah, okay. What kind of music do you like?" And I was like, I like heavy metal." And he goes, "I remember going, oh man, maybe I shouldn't have said heavy metal. Maybe I should have said something else."
Yeah.
And he's like, "What kind of movies you like?" I was like, "I like action." And he goes, just like the disappointing look. And I go, "Oh man, and then Johnny Ace, he goes, "Well, Finley says he looks like a rat." And Vince goes like this. He goes, and I go, "Oh no." I go, "Fuck no. No, please." No. And he goes, "Can you talk like this?" And I was like, "Oh my God." And he's like playing the character to me. And I'm like, "Excuse me, sir." He goes, "Can you talk like this?" And I was like, and I remember I couldn't do it. And he's like, "Well, get better at it, kid, okay?" And I remember feeling so shitty about that meeting. I remember going to my hotel that night, and I got tissues, and I stuck them up my nose so that I could talk like this. So I practiced all night, and then I came down. I was in catering. Johnny pulls up right next to me with this tray, and he goes, "Kid, how you doing?" I go, "I'm doing okay, Mr. Ace." And he looked at me, and he goes, "Come on." He grabbed me by my hand. He took me at the door. He knocked on the door, and I hear, "Come in." And Johnny's like, "Go in there, kid." And I was like, "Oh, fuck no. What? Fuck no. No. Get in there now." And then he kind of like, you know, helped me in, and then he shut the door behind him. He didn't come in. And I'm like, "Oh, shit." And Vince's back was to me, and Vince is sitting there stirring his coffee, and he's like, "What do you want?" And I go, "Mr. McMahon." And he goes, "Yes." "A lot of guys around here are making fun of me, see?" And he's like, he's around with his coffee as he's stirring it. And he goes, "Yeah, what are they saying?" And I go, "They're saying I talk funny." And he's like, "Oh, yeah? You know what I say?" And I was like, "No, Mr. McMahon, what are you saying?" And he's like, "I say, fuck them." I was like, "Fuck them." And then I just remember like walking out of that door feeling this accomplishment. But then when I shut the door, I'm like, I think I just shot myself in the foot too. Like, holy shit, I got the dumbest character possibly. You know. But that was probably the most memorable story I've got with him, with when it was like really one-on-one interaction.
Yeah.
But you know, Vince is, you know, he's a great guy. You know what I mean? He's all about hard work, dedication, and business. He's about business. And so you know, you're running a multi-million, billion-dollar company. Like, that's what it boils down to is how much money can you make me?
Yeah.
I'm going to pay you well. How much are you going to make me? So, you know, at the end of the day, I just, you know, I thank him so much for everything that he's given me. And he's changed my life, literally. Yeah. Like, I never would have met my wife, you know, if it wasn't them for her being hired, you know, in Deep South. I never would have met some of my closest friends.
Yeah.
He's given me everything. My finances, my homes, I never would have had my son if I never would have had my wife. So yeah. I've got nothing but love for that guy, you know? Yeah.
That's great, Connor. I don't think we can top that story. So what a way to end the interview. That story is just amazing. So great support.
Wish it wasn't, but that really did happen.
Oh, that's definitely the highlight. But before we sign off, I want to say thank you very much. But before we do sign off, do you want to tell everyone where they can find you on social media and obviously about your school?
Yeah. So if there's anybody out there that's looking to, you know, to better themselves or be a part of and to do it correctly, professional wrestling, they can go to TampaBayProWrestling.com. They can get in touch with me personally, look for the verifications for BigCon 1. Just DM me, or they can go to, you know, Jay Lethal. They can find Jay Lethal, hit him up as well. I know there's a waiting period right now, but, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, every student that we have, that we train them right, we teach them the right ways. And, you know, and that's really important to us because after all, it's our name and reputation that they're carrying out there. And also really quick, they can always go to Grudge Match Brand and they can pick up an Awakening t-shirt because that's what we will be debuting as next time you see us.
Awesome. Well, Con, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. I know we scheduled a couple of times, but it was definitely worth the wait. And yeah, just great stories. And yeah, absolutely love this interview. So absolute pleasure having you. And hopefully we can do this again pretty soon.
Thank you very much.
Cool.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening, hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to also head over to our YouTube channel where you can watch all our interviews in video format and catch our top 25 countdowns. And if you could like and subscribe, that'd be even better for us. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at That 90s Wrestling Podcast. Till next time, we'll see you then. Bye.